Blog Talk Radio.
Garfield Reed. I'm waiting for my partner in crime, Ivory, and Musa to kick in a few. But today is a very important topic for a lot of people. One, I'm Jamaican, and when I grew up in Jamaica, all I grew up around was people smoking all day, every day. I never smoked in my life. I never drank in my life. I'm not a drinker. I'm not a smoker. So I'm not an expert on marijuana or what it does to you mentally, physically, whatever. I'm just a person out here saying, listen, this is a topic. A lot of people get locked up for it, and I don't see why. It's not a serious drug. It's not crack cocaine. Listen, man, ladies and gentlemen, marijuana, in my opinion, does not need to be something where you get locked up for selling weed. I just think this is something average, and folks should just be easy with it, you know? I'm going to play a song real quick. This is by, I'm a part of a crew called the Block Controllers. We make a lot of music. And I just thought this song was to set the mood right to start off. I mean, of course, we talk about religion and all that stuff, but this right here is a nice song, and I just thought I should start the show off with it, but Michael Jackson kicked in, and I want you guys to take a listen to this song right here. Not that I'm supporting the habit, but it's a nice song.
Every morning, I roll down my window and start puffing on that endo. Puffing on that endo. Every morning, I roll down my window and start puffing on that endo.
Kinda look outside for this one.
Puffing on that endo.
Ellie Yardy, better than Black Barbie. Soon as my eyes open, yup, reaching for that Marley. In that M6 or that XL Harvey. Notes of Parchy, Crayola hair, Guardy. Garden variety, Cuban still with that terror. Rose-colored shades and bloodshot scaleras. Now what's better than that green on a golf course? Or on a yacht, plus hydro, or the concourse? I need my multis, I'm all for green vitamins. And every morning, I am trying to get higher than, prior than. Man cycles like a tire man, 4-alarm blaze, I'm needing multi-firemen. Wake up in the morning to my God, I better wake up every morning to my lot. If I don't wake up in the morning to my pot, the one of you suckers gon' get got.
But I need it every morning.
I need to say same thing.
I roll down my window.
I'm in trouble.
And start puffing on that endo.
Keep me same thing.
Puffing on that endo. Every morning, I roll down my window.
Hello.
I'ma cut it here, ladies and gentlemen. I'ma cut it right here. I'ma play some more later on. But you know what? I'm telling everybody right now, if you want to talk about this whole marijuana issue, now is the time to call and vent yourself to the world and say, hey, I support this or I don't support it. You shouldn't smoke it. You should smoke it. Let's keep it real for a minute. If you want to call in right now, you can call in at 347-826-9457, or you could go in the chat room. You could go in the chat room at blogtalkradio.com/itsrealtalklive, and we could talk. You know, let's get it out there. Marijuana to me is not a drug that you should lock anybody up for. I've never smoked it. I don't know what it does do to people, but I don't think anybody should be locked up for marijuana. Let me take this call live here. Caller, you're live on the air. This is It's Real Talk Live. How you doing, caller?
Wiley speaking, so tune into my sermon. What's the word, man? I'm off to check the bird, man. For that herb, man, tell about my turban and wash it down with some OG on some bourbon. It's in the reggae. Sure, all I do it, Bridget.
Yeah, you're live on the air, man. Listen, man, so you're saying that you support weed, right?
Legalize the thing, Bridget.
Okay. Why you think it should be legalized, man? Why not keep it as it is?
Herbal medicine, man. You cannot hold the medicine back. You have to legalize the thing.
I hear
you
that.
See it.
Well, what about the folks who say it's a drug and we need to just keep it the way it is, lock people up, give them tickets, whatever, just to keep it going? Because, I mean, at the end of the day, it's still considered illegal. What do you think about Jamaica? Jamaica is trying to work out a deal right now with Canada to export marijuana, but it's illegal in the country. But they're trying to export it to Canada for sales. What do you think about that?
Well, the way I think about that is more money to Jamaica, build up the agriculture business, and export the thing, because right now the thing still going to grow. So if you don't use it, it's still going to smoke and it's still going to sell and it's still going to come here illegal. So guess what? You put the people in for agriculture, and you export the thing, and it's a product becomes money for the country anyway.
Mm.
So, in one sense, it's doing good for the economy of the youth, then we don't have nothing better to do anyway.
Okay,
so
okay.
You might as well put money in their pocket and give them a way out, or give them a way to become agriculture, as you know, you don't know we all are already anyway.
All right, let me ask this. What about in the United States? It's illegal here. So you're saying you support it being legal 100% in the United States?
It's better to be legal than illegal. Guess what? You know, the youth, them can walk around with a little spliff in their pocket and don't be harassed for a little spliff. Understand? Now, when we're talking about somebody who has sell it and sell it all over the place, pounds and pounds and pounds, yes, you have to put a stoppage to that. Right? But the youth, them supposed to be able to walk around with a spliff in their pocket on their way to somewhere private where they can smoke a spliff. Right?
But what about the folks? All right, so I'm like this. I'm a proponent that all drugs should be legal. Let me just get the cat out of the bag. I think all drugs should be legal because at the end of the day, the folks who are really the folks that are taking drugs are usually more than likely. Yes, you have kids that take drugs, but instead of them doing it illegally, why not just make it legal? You could get whatever you want, no big deal. You're an adult. Instead of you saying, I'm saying you shouldn't take drugs, but at the end of the day, why criminalize, why make somebody into a criminal for a habit, for something that they like doing, you know? And I don't think within myself, I don't think honestly that anybody in America should be locked up for smoking marijuana unless they're transporting it at a heavy amount. I understand all of that. But at the end of the day, this right now, people in Colorado, they're chilling right now. People in Colorado and Washington. Washington.
But those people not out there smoking out in public, right? They're out smoking in the privacy of their own place or maybe a health spa or something to that nature, right? They're not running the street smoking like that. So when people hear these things, it's not that we're giving people the authority to go out there and smoke on the street, spliff anytime they want to. That's not what they're saying. What they're saying is to make it legal where that the young black youths who are being penalized more than the people that actually smoke it are getting longer jail time for things for walking around with a spliff. Understand?
It goes back to the whole prison industry complex because, I mean, a lot of people don't know that Mario Cuomo built more prisons than any other governor in the history of this country. And he built so many prisons, and now they're privatized. We end up making couches like Jennifer convertibles and Timberland boots and all type of stuff so they don't have to go to China anymore for the sweatshops.
I mean, if you look at it, the basic license plates that we pay $150 for to put on our cars, understand, that comes out of the prison system.
Yeah, that's
for
regular.
Next to
we
nothing.
Know that.
For next to nothing, but they charge us $150, right? Every year or so, we got to renew it. It's $150 or so. So,
My whole thing is, I don't think anybody should be locked up for weed unless they're transporting a big amount. That's just way out there. Like, you know what? This guy got to go to jail for something. This is way too much weed, you know, and going state to state and all that stuff. But as far as selling it, how would they set it up? Would they have to set it up the same way like how Colorado and Washington is set up? I could see New York legalizing weed. I could see New York doing it.
It's too much a topic of discussion for them not to talk about it and bring it in the forefront of the national arena, right? So it's like this. You have to legalize it because, one, people are doing it illegal anyway. You know what I'm saying? And, two, people talk about this being a gateway to other drugs. But
hold on, let me finish my thought, though.
But you ain't never hear nobody die over no marijuana overdose, right?
So when you're talking about
it being the gateway to what? People that overdose on other drugs don't smoke marijuana. Understand? So what are you talking about, gateway? Gateway to what? You know what I'm saying? I've heard die of no marijuana overdose. Because you cannot smoke enough marijuana to overdose. not in your lifetime.
My brother's calling you live. Is it Victor, right?
Yes, this is Victor. Peace.
Peace, my brother. How you doing? Where are you calling by the way? Houston?
I'm in Nevada right now. My wife lives in Nevada. That's where I'm at right now.
All right, I'm calling from the Bronx.
All right, all right. So what do you think about this whole marijuana thing, Vincent? What do you think, Victor? What do you think about the whole marijuana being legalized? What do you think about that?
I think it should have never been made illegal in the first place, to be honest with you. I mean, any country that can sit up here and promote the use of alcohol and authorize the use of alcohol that has been responsible for millions and billions of more deaths probably than marijuana will ever be accountable for, I think that that's ridiculous. That's mm-hmm. ridiculous, man. It's just really ridiculous. I mean, if it's
but
okay
do
to
you,
smoke...
Do you...
No, go ahead.
Go ahead. I was going to ask you, do you think they should legalize all the drugs? Because I'm a proponent of that.
No, not really. I'm going to be honest with you, not necessarily all of them. Because, you know, there's certain things like crack cocaine, for instance. You know, the addictive side effects of it. You know, I've seen people throw their whole entire lives, you know, away based on that. You know, cocaine, you know, that. I mean, it's an individual's choice whether or not they're going to do drugs, and the law is not going to make them do it or not do it, you know. But it's basically, you know, I don't think it's, you know, beneficial as from a societal perspective for us to legalize something like cocaine, you know, or heroin or something. Heroin
I'm going to tell you, you're the best argument. You're the greatest argument for legalizing all the drugs. When it's illegal, they use it, right?
Right.
So if it's legal and they use it, you know what the biggest difference is? They don't go
What's
to jail.
That? Are you right?
They don't go to
you're
jail.
Right.
The prisons don't get filled up. Remember, crack and cocaine, although crack is crack cocaine, but powdered form of cocaine, you get lesser time than when you smoke crack.
Exactly.
So because
this is
the real issue here now. The issue is not if it's good for you or not, because America doesn't care about if it's good for you or not, because liquor is not good for you, period.
Good for you. Yep. Cigarette
remember
neither.
When Al Capone used to transport liquor from Canada? From Canada
right.
and come through to try to sneak
right.
it into the country, and
right.
they made it. And the Bush, who was it? The Bush or the Rockefeller family? They were involved in liquor and all that stuff. They were one of the earliest barons when it comes to alcohol and all that stuff. But my point is, allegedly, by the way. But my point is, it was illegal to drink alcohol, right? And alcohol,
right.
there is nobody could give me an argument to say alcohol is better than marijuana. Or even crack, or even cocaine. I'm going to tell you why. Because as you just said, the amount of people that have died. Come on, you know when it dead. You ever see drink and drive commercials? They say don't drink and drive, and people still
yes.
drink and drive. They
and
still
I watch
drink
the
and drive
too.
Exactly. So my point
too.
Is, that's my point for making it legal.
Let me interject for a second here. The reason why they're probably against it is for that same argument that you just brought on, right? Don't smoke and drive. You know what I'm saying? It don't make you alert. It makes you lazy and things of that nature.
Mm-hmm.
You're chemically unbalanced, so you shouldn't be operating a motor vehicle. You know what I'm saying? Those are the words that need to get out there in terms of that, right? You shouldn't use substance while operating a vehicle, period.
Right.
Simple
you
as
know,
that.
In defense of that, though, I'll say this, too. You know, out of all the states I've been to, and all the places I've actually been to in my life, you know, I've never really seen somebody have a high driving accident on marijuana. I've never actually seen that in my life. The only place I've ever went to that I've actually seen that is Las Vegas, Nevada, where I was just, you know, I live on the outskirts of Las Vegas now, but, like, that's the only place I've ever seen it happen. You know, I've heard of it happen. It was a lady, but she was on multiple drugs. It wasn't like she was on one. She was actually on pills, too, they said, you know, and they said because she
right.
was smoking marijuana while she was driving, but she was high on pills, too. And
okay.
then she fell asleep, and I think she hit a child or something like that, you know, it was a big issue about that, you know, and they were trying to make a real big thing out here, you know, as far as legalization and stuff like that is concerned. But as far as marijuana being legal, I think, you know, I don't think it's even an argument, you know, whether it should or shouldn't be. I mean, it would help us as a society. I mean, honestly.
To my understanding, the whole thing is marijuana is a downer, right?
Right. That's how it's termed. I ain't going to say it is. That's how it's termed as being a downer. Yeah.
It don't uplift you. It don't make you hyper. It just beats you a downer.
Relax.
Come on, man. Some of the side effects is you get munchies, you eat too much, and, you know, you go to White Castle like Harold and Kumar, and you go eat. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So the thing about it is, like, you know, I'm there, man. I'm like, yo, legalize the thing. I just don't want people to think that they could just light up any which way they want to. There got to be
right.
some guidelines about that.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, even
well,
in California,
I'll
you know,
say
I just,
this. What people do in their own home is their business. But I'm saying to everybody out there, man, you cannot stop drugs when it comes to America. America is the most corrupted country in the history of mankind. I don't care what nobody says. If you legalize crack and heroin and everything, they're going to find some other drugs. They're going to mix up some chemical bombing fluid with some fish tank water and some other stuff and make some new drug and say, hey, this is the new thing.
Yeah,
this is what America does.
Let me interject on the same argument that you're on, right? It's like this. Marijuana is illegal. K2 is legal. They sell them in any bodega in New York City.
Right.
Right? Mm. So it's a synthetic form of marijuana that they spray some marijuana, whatever, on some bushes to give you the same effects as marijuana. And that's
right.
Legal. You could go buy. Any kid 18 or year or older could go in a bodega and just pick that up.
Right,
it gives you the same effect as marijuana, but it's not as good because it's not really the real deal.
No, because it's not natural. That's the thing.
It's not
natural,
exactly.
What they're doing is they add chemicals to substitute for the natural chemicals that are already in marijuana. They add artificial chemicals to make it, you know, like the high compensatory, I guess you could say, to, you know, a marijuana high. But I mean, it's not like that, you know. I mean, I've seen the brothers out here. They do it. They call it out here. They call it what they call it, spice, out here.
Okay.
You know, in Vegas, you know, whatnot. But it's not the same thing at all. You know, it's actually the brothers were saying, man, it's worse. You know, as far as health is concerned, to do that.
It actually is. But you know, that's the thing about it. People are crying for the legalization of it. That's the building synthetic version of it,
right?
Just so they could exploit it.
Right.
Understand? But the youths are the ones that are getting messed up over it because the synthetic version is actually worse than the real thing itself. Because,
like
you said, it's not natural.
Right. I believe God put that here for a reason. I don't believe that it was just, you know, like it's one of those plants that shouldn't be touched and nothing like that. Because I believe I read in a book somewhere, I think it was in Encyclopedia in Carter somewhere like that, if I'm not mistaken, years ago, where they said that the discovery of marijuana by the Native Indians, or excuse me, Native Americans in this country, right, dates back, I think it was pre-European colonialism or whatnot, supposedly, right? But they said the two warring tribes were fitting to go to war with each other. They were fitting to kill each other. And they said out of nowhere, like, there was a storm. They said it was fitting to be a storm or something like that. You know, clouds were in the sky, lightning bolts were hitting the ground, but there wasn't no rain. Well, they said this lightning bolt hit a field over there, like, close by these two warring tribes. It just happened to be a marijuana field. And, you know, next thing you know, the smoke comes over there, clouds the two tribes out, and next thing you know, they didn't want to fight no more. All they wanted to do was hug each other and eat.
Okay.
You know, I was like, that right there in itself, to me, it's like a peacekeeping drug, if anything, to me. That's where I look at it, but I don't know.
Well, I'll tell you this also. Marijuana is from Mexico, right? Because you married Tijuana, and she's from Mexico. So remember that, all right? Because we all married to Juana, right? Being Spanish. She's from Mexico. Understand?
Right.
Yeah, listen, man, there's some humor to it, and there's some real facts, you know what I'm saying? The bottom line is drugs is not good for you, your system, right?
Right.
It's definitely not, you know, but there are some medical usage for it, which we should not block, right? And then there are some people
I'm like, I've never smoked. But I've had a lot of herbs in my system, and the herbs have worked. I mean, I'm not a proponent of smoking. I just don't think smoking helps. That's just my opinion. That don't mean I'm right.
Right.
That don't mean I'm right at all, because when you smoke, sometimes you get the chemicals going directly into the system, like our cigarette, you know?
Right.
A cigarette goes into the system, all those chemicals. So it's the same thing. I don't know what it does when it's lit or when it's not lit. But I'll tell you this, herbs, the herbs heal, and they have some good herbs. You have some bad herbs. I've never smoked. I don't know what it is to get high. You know what? Maybe I need to smoke for 1 week and come on the air and let people know what.
I don't think you want to do that, my brother. I don't think you want to do that. If you never did it before, leave it alone.
Yeah, that would be my advice too on that particular thing too, man.
Leave it alone, my brother.
Once you start doing something like that, it's kind of hard to stop because it's like, you know, you get accustomed to the feeling. You know, I can say from experience, years ago, I started.
I mean, they say it's the healing of the nation. It was found on the grave of the great King Solomon, and You know, when Moses was whatever in the burning bush, that's what was burning. All kind of story behind marijuana. Right?
Yeah, you know what? That's crazy too. I think that's just kind of they get too far fetched with that stuff, man. They really get out there with that. I don't think that's really even necessary for all that, man. Just leave that alone, man. It is what it is, man.
I really wouldn't want to see you take that out, my brother, because you know there are some things out there that would really mess your mind up, and you know. Basically, one of these things are marijuana that leads, you know what I'm saying, to making you more schizophrenic. You know, it puts you on that path if you cannot handle it. Because
right.
The mind is a terrible thing to waste, man. And if your mind can't handle certain things, it will push you into what would they say, madness.
Right,
you know?
Right.
And it will make you crazy. You know, so, you know, to you, my brother, you know, I wouldn't say, you know, smoke for like a week. I wouldn't even say try it. You know, maybe you should be like Bush and don't inhale. You know what I'm saying? I don't
you
know
mean
what
Clinton,
to say.
You mean Clinton. You mean Clinton.
Clinton, whatever. They're the same. I don't know. You know. You know.
You
so,
know, I say this, though. This is what I say. For it, I'm thinking in two ways. If it's legalized, there's a lot of people I know who is not legal in the country, and that's their only form of income. So that would rub out those folks who got to raise their kids who are not here legally, right? The second thing is, if it becomes legal now, who is it benefiting by it becoming legal? That means now it belongs to the government. The government is now watching how much money y'all make.
Right.
If you're doing that, and who would be allowed to sell this? Do you have to go to a class? Do you
right.
got to take a course, like what they do in Colorado and Washington? Because they're real organized over there. It is so
right.
organized. You know, this sister
right.
just hit me up on Facebook. She just, hold on, let me read what she said. She said, I was looking at the news just a few minutes ago, and this family has two kids that has seizures, and they moved to Colorado because they found out that liquid marijuana has decreased the seizures tremendously in the kids. So, hey, you know, there's other...
Oh, yeah, they had a little girl the other day on TV the other day, and you can watch it on the Internet that, you know, there's a certain strand of marijuana that they grow. I think it's less in the THC, but high in something else. I'm not sure, but, you know, it's a strand that they grow just for that purpose.
Right.
So it is helping some people if it's used in the right way. You know what I'm saying? Other people just want a euphoric type of feel. You know what I'm saying? It makes you feel good. It makes you think a lot. Whatever. You know what I'm saying? Recreational, however
but
you, you want to put
with
it.
The stress, but with the stress of everyday life, though, I mean, sometimes you need a smoke. Some people smoke cigarettes to take a break because of stress. It's a stress reliever. And smoking marijuana is probably a stress reliever, just like taking any other drugs. I'm just a strong proponent of legalizing every single drug because people are going to go and find out their own little way, their own way to find some drugs to take it illegally. This is why
well,
they have
only,
crack houses. You know they
yeah,
have crack houses. It's the reason why they have crack houses, right?
Right.
That's where
right.
people go and smoke crack. So
right,
I'm telling
right.
you, people are going to find a way, no matter how, if you make something illegal, they're going
to
legalize it in their own way. So
well,
that's my whole thing. I don't think any drug should be illegal. I mean, it's going to be wrong for somebody underage.
I can understand and concur with you on that note because I'm going to tell you who benefits from the ones being illegal. Who's the primary beneficiary of all this is the prison industrial complex. Inside the United States of America, they're the ones that benefit from this through slave labor, you know, and over there.
Exactly.
Especially in states like Texas, you know, and people get mass incarcerated. They have them on cotton fields, on the farmland, you know, doing whatever for pigs, you know, if they're going doing electrician work, if they're going being, some of them even firefighters in the prison complex, man. I mean, it's crazy. They get all this free labor out of people, man, and that's the only thing really that you're really getting out of these people. It's not rehabilitation. You can't rehabilitate a person by confining them in a cell with a whole bunch of other men. The only thing you can do with that is try to turn them gay. That's the only thing you can do. I mean, and other than that, you know, I mean, it's no benefit for a person to be incarcerated. People who are sick and they constantly commit crimes, they don't need incarceration. They need mental counseling or something like that. They need to be put in an environment to where they can seek psychiatric help from people because obviously they grew up in bad home environments.
Victor, You know what a person in prison and somebody with bad credit have in common? You know what they
Everything.
Have in common? They're repeat offenders. They're repeat offenders.
That
means
yeah.
if somebody who's clean up their credit, they always mess it back up. 90%
yeah.
of them.
Yeah.
And the people that what do you call it? The people that go to jail, 90% of them go right back in the
right
system.
Back, yeah.
So people
yes,
who fix
true.
Their credit and people who go to jail have the same problem. They are repeat offenders constantly.
Yeah, but
they're going to fix their credit
this
and
out.
Mess
let
it
me,
up.
Let me interject for a second. And we need to talk about this also. You see, in the discussion, you know what I'm saying, bringing this in a national discussion, the thing about legalizing marijuana, what do you do with the charges of people that were busted for marijuana offenses?
That's
if this
why
legal?
They don't. That's what he just brought up, the whole prison industry complex. Because, listen, the other day, right, there's something called in New York the Rockefeller Laws. They're trying to, they were supposed to vote on it like a 2 years ago, I think, or a year ago. They were going to reduce or change the Rockefeller Laws. And if they did that, 50% of the people in jail would have to come out.
Right.
Wow.
They don't want that in New York. Because a lot of them is on weed charges, like heavy weed, not little weed charges, heavy weed charges, or
right.
crack charges, heavy crack charges. So if you get caught with a certain amount of crack, the same amount of coke, you go to jail for a longer time. You could get 10 years for the crack and get, like, probation for the coke. That's just how it is in New York. So they try
right.
to, you see, it goes back because they know what the people are going to, listen. The whole crack thing, you know, people, we're going to have a program just about crack cocaine and how it got into the community and everything. Because
right.
a lot of people don't know.
I read
the
some
CIA
books on
claimed
that too.
Because of the whole Nicaragua thing. I actually retweeted on my page on Facebook a couple of days ago.
That's Reagan and Bush, man.
Yeah, Reagan. Yeah, yeah, back in the day. Yeah,
that's those
they did the
people,
whole
man.
Nicaragua thing. They raised money.
They turned a blind eye and let that stuff in this place.
Did y'all brothers ever
no,
see
they,
the,
they let it know. They knew it was happening.
There was an article actually too public. I actually seen that on Yahoo News, man. And you know if it's on Yahoo News, I mean it's pretty well known. They couldn't hide that, right? It was a CIA plane or jet buzz that crashed. I forgot where it crash landed at, but it crash landed with over 5 tons of cocaine in it. 5 tons of cocaine in it. Coming back into the United States of America. Guess where that cocaine was going to? It wasn't
Texas,
going for medical.
Mexico?
It probably wasn't going for medical use. What I'm saying is this is going to the streets, though, is what I'm saying. It was going to the streets of the United States of America, whether it would have been in Texas, whether it would have been in New York, whether it would have been in California. It was going to the streets and into the ghetto urban neighborhoods. It wasn't going into the white neighborhoods. That's not where they put it at, you know. And the crack cocaine, it was a book written, what's this lady's name, Jocelyn something, I can't remember, but it's called The Black Panther Speak. Where they documented letters from and statements from, you know, people like Fred Hampton, Huey P. Newton, Afeni Shakur, Tupac's mother, you know, and it's compiled in this book where they said that, when they first got exposed to cocaine, they knew it had to come from the government because they said it just popped up in the hood out of nowhere. They said it just popped
yeah,
up
Yeah, because,
there. Like,
listen, the guy, you know what, I'm going to read it. I think tomorrow I'm going to talk about it tomorrow. I'm going to talk about the whole Nicaragua CIA thing. If I don't talk about it tomorrow, later on this week. Because a lot of people think it's like conspiracy theories. It's not. This is something that they actually admitted to. It's like the Iran-Contra scandal with Oliver North. This guy's on Fox
right.
News now talking all his junk, but he was the main culprit behind the whole Iran-Contra scandal. They were the one that was selling guns and arms and all that stuff behind
right.
the government's back, but it really wasn't behind the back. They was doing it for money. And
they
he was
it,
a part of it,
it,
Oliver North.
To have what they call it a plausible deniability to where, you know, they
exactly.
can say, all right, you know, I didn't have nothing to do with it. You know, I didn't know nothing about that. They knew what was going on, though. They did.
Yeah, same with Nicaragua. They had to find some way to raise money. Because remember, you know, when the Black Panthers were doing their thing, they put a lot of drugs in the community in the drug dealers' hands. They just had them selling drugs. People
right.
always going to get high, man. People have been getting high for centuries, man. For centuries.
Yeah, they have.
So there's always something out there. It's just that weed just has been the one, I think, that has lasted the longest.
Right.
Weed's been around for centuries. So
yeah,
weed is just there. You can't get rid of it. That's just something from the earth that you could grow. With cocaine, now, it's a whole nother ball game. Whole nother ball
right.
game. You got to go through this. You got to step on this. You got to
yeah,
do this.
Yeah,
you got to boil
yeah.
this.
Add
you
this, that,
do
and
too
other
much.
Too. Yeah. It's true.
You got to do too much. But the weed is totally different. Let me bring in my brother from Detroit, Michigan. My brother and my co-host, Muhammad, straight out of 8 Mile, Eminem's hometown,
brother,
8 Mile, Detroit.
Musa, Musa.
What's happening? What's up? What's up? What's happening,
what's
everybody?
Yo, Musa, Musa,
good,
you know,
man.
You have a king name, right?
Oh, well, thank you very much. Thank you very much.
Hey, Musa, before you go on, before you go on, Musa, I want to play this song I was playing earlier. And get you guys input on this song. It's a weed song. It's about weed, promoting it. I just let me get your feedback on this song right here.
Every morning, I roll down my window and start puffing on that endo. Puffing on that endo. Every morning, I roll down my window and start puffing on that endo.
Kind of like outside for this one.
On that endo, oh. Ellie Yardy, badder than Black Barbie. Soon as my eyes open, yup, reaching for that Marley. In that M6 or that XL Harvey. No subparty, Crayola hair, Guardy. Garden variety, Cuban still with that terror. Rose-colored shades and bloodshot scaleras. Now what's better than that green on a golf course? Or on a yacht, plus hydro or the concourse? I need my multis, I'm all for green vitamins. And every morning I am trying to get higher than prior than man cycles like a tire man. Four alarm blaze, I'm needing multi-firemen. Wake up in the morning to my God. I better wake up every morning to my lot. If I don't wake up in the morning to my pot, then one of you suckers gon' get got.
I need it every morning.
I need to stay sane, baby.
I roll down my window
and start puffing on
that endo. Keep me
sane, baby. Puffing on that endo. Every morning, I roll down my window and start puffing on that endo. Ellie, I see you.
Puffing on that endo.
Okay. Yeah. Uh-huh. While he preaching, so tune into my sermon. What's the word, man? I'm off to check the bird, man. For that herb, man, tally bud my turban. And wash it down with some OJ on some bourbon. This ain't no reggae, no dirt, this is sinister. This ain't domestic, this, yeah, we eat the, yeah. The type of draw only smoked by prime minister. Long distance outside your perimeter. Back in the mix like Vic and I'm leaning. From 9-5 and I'm back on the Deegan. I'm smoking, not in a rush, no speeding. My eyes so chinky, looking like I'm sleeping. We got green so stretched like Central Park. And one pull if you out the ballpark. I'm not speaking Franks, we just speaking Franks. And just pollute the sphere until the air gets
every
dank.
Every morning, I roll down my window.
Like that to start
puffing on that endo. Puffing on that endo.
Yo.
Every morning, I roll down my window.
Yeah, that's what you call a weed song.
Yeah, that is.
I had to dig that out the archives. Musa, what do you think about that song, man? I know you're Muslim and you can't support it, but what do you think about the song on the whole?
I like the song, to me. That, you know,
not to discriminate about, black folks got rhythm. So once you hear a certain beat, you're going to love it. Not saying white folks not going to feel it. They're going to feel it too, because the beat is thumping, but The song is hot. The song is a hot song. It's a real hot song. I'm going to play it right through the show anyway, because we're talking about marijuana, so I'm going to give marijuana a little promotion today, because I'm for legalizing marijuana, period. I'm
so
for legalizing all drugs.
Yeah,
all drugs. Because the main issue with marijuana than the other set of drugs, you're not dying from marijuana. You are not dying from marijuana. If you are dying from smoking it and whatever, then I'll say, okay, nah, we got to get rid of this. But you're not dying from marijuana, so you can't put a block on it and say, hey, marijuana got to go. No, it don't work like that.
Mm-hmm. No, it doesn't.
And more people say it
got to
go, people still going to find it. Because it's been illegal ever since I got in this country. It's been illegal forever. And people still smoking it.
I know, right?
I know.
Right, Zay? Zay, they've been smoking weed forever. Forever.
Forever.
I put it to you like this. I've been smoking weed or taking my father's spliff when he's not looking from since I was a little boy. And I ain't OD since. And I ain't graduated to no other drugs. So let them talk. You know what I mean?
Musa,
right.
you think I know a lot of people say marijuana is addictive. I think it's more of like a relaxer, in my opinion.
Right.
What do you think, Musa?
Absolutely. It is.
Hold on, Musa. Musa, you say absolutely. You used to smoke weed?
Absolutely,
oh.
Yes.
Okay. Now we're talking. Okay.
Support it. I'm a real Muslim. See, that's the difference. I'm real. I'm not fake. You know what I'm saying? I'm going to tell you the truth. You know, I love weed.
Right.
And I support it.
I apologize, ladies and gentlemen, for my excessive laughing, but it's funny because Musa is just too real for me, you know, too real. But, you know, it's funny. Later on, ladies and gentlemen, who does join the program, we're going to talk about Paul and Jesus and, you know, we're going to talk about a couple other things. But marijuana, to me, if you find a president running on marijuana, he would win in a landslide, 90% of the country.
Right.
Yeah.
The people
if,
would be behind
if,
him because of that.
If,
yeah.
if Obama could come out for gay marriage and win, come on,
mm-hmm.
man. I'm running on weed. If
yeah.
I'm running, mm-hmm. I'm running on weed, man. We got to legalize the weed, man.
Yeah,
the guy
funny.
In Toronto smoking crack. The guy in Toronto, the mayor,
like,
he's smoking crack, and people love him. He's smoking
yes.
crack,
mm-hmm.
for heaven's sake.
Bush
and people love this
cokehead.
Guy.
Bush was a cokehead, crackhead, whatever you want to call it, man. And they, you know, like
mm-hmm.
everybody voted for him too. You know, like
God, he was. Plus,
you know,
he was a drunk.
Yes, he
mm-hmm.
was a drunk too. Yes, he was.
Oh, by
yeah.
the way, by the way, hold on. By the way, I have to give George Bush a shout out because George Bush came out, I think, 2 days ago saying for his after presidency, he's gonna. What he said he's going to do, he's going to be promoting for the veterans. You know, this guy was in hiding since he left office. After he left office and 750,000 people were losing their jobs every month, we didn't hear nothing about this guy. Now
right.
all of a sudden you want to help veterans, which is like, what, 6 years later? 6 years
yeah,
later.
Yeah, but he didn't do bad for the veterans, though, to be honest with you.
Yeah, no, don't get me wrong. He is an army dude. He loves he knew the veterans, but I just want to point out that he's in the news. That's my point. I'm not saying I'm against him doing whatever. I'm just saying that he's back in the news, which is crazy, you know, because
right,
George Bush was in hiding.
Is.
This
it
dude
is.
Was hiding because he trust
I mean,
me. Yeah.
Listen,
what he did.
I mean, I'm not even trying to do the old politics stuff because, you know, we all know that the president ain't really the president. There's the House, right? The House runs
yeah,
things, right? So, you know, and saying Bush did this and Obama do this or he can't do this, there's all the other fools that we have up in there that is in it for themselves and not for the people, you know. So
right.
they all kind of slow stuff down. If you look at this, man, what is the benefit of marijuana to the whole society as a whole, you know what I mean? And what is it taking away from their pockets? If it's less criminalized, then we're going to have less black people in jail for marijuana. Right?
Right,
and it's gonna be
right.
less money for them to make. You know, let's
yep.
talk about the issues, man. The issues ain't in that marijuana it makes you OD and makes you, you know, have more accidents and things of that nature. The issue is, what are we gonna gain from it, or what are we just gonna be taken away from it being legal?
Right,
you know, and right now, if it's legal, there's gonna be less people going in jail. It's not criminalized. There's less people going in jail, and it's going to be less of a reason for you to lock up the black males, especially in New York, where I'm from, for having a bag of weed in their pocket. It's,
right.
You know what I mean? It's going to be less of people going through the system. Yes, give
right.
me a fine, $100 fine, I'll go pay, whatever. But I'm not going to be in the system.
Right.
You know, things like
but we
that.
Know who that. We know who these laws, though, are targeting. You know, it's not like, you know, you don't see too many white people get locked up for possession of marijuana or even possession of cocaine. You know, this is a black targeted, you know, system. You know, they target black people, and it's not like, it's no secret to that anymore. You know, even the Stand Your Ground
mm-hmm.
laws right now are predominantly for white people. You know, I was just reading yesterday, what's the sister's name? Not the sister who shot in the air with her boyfriend with a domestic violence dispute. It was another one. She was chased down by some neo-Nazis, you know, while they were yelling racial slurs at this sister. And the only thing she did was defend herself with a pair of scissors after being slashed in the face with a broken bottle. You know, and she was incarcerated for, I think, 46 months. 46 months.
Mm.
So, you know, the laws are in themselves, are, what I'm saying to get to is that they are racially biased. They're targeting. You don't see – how many white people in New York do you see get stopped and frisked?
Well, we already figured that out. We figured that one out already. Mm-hmm. That's obvious. That's obvious,
yeah.
Right there. You know, we're not even contesting that. The whole issue with stop and frisk is this: they're saying that if somebody, I mean, it's just racial profiling 101. That's all it is. It's not even something to argue about. It is so obvious. But my whole thing is this: the reason why you have to stop and frisk, it goes back to the whole weed situation again. Most of these dudes are selling weed.
Right.
So at the end of the day, they're trying to cut out something or grab these dudes and put them in a system that is privatized, the prison industry complex, so that they could make their buddies more money and use us as cheap labor. They don't have to use
cheap
sweatshops
labor,
no more. They don't have to go to Asia to sweatshops. They have us
they
here.
They get it free.
Lock them up.
Yeah, they get it free.
Lock bodies.
They get it free. That's crazy.
All right, man.
Real quick before y'all go, I just wanted to read something from the Denver Post. It says something like this. It's an estimated $134 million windfall state expect to receive in tax and fees from marijuana sales. And they said the state budget writers project $1 billion in pot sales next year.
Wow.
So it's money to be made. The
what
government
state
is going to benefit. Huh?
What state is that?
In Denver. Denver Post is writing. Right.
I thought you were saying California because I'm writing
next to California.
No,
they ain't reached there yet.
Well, it's legal right here in Michigan.
It's legal in California.
Why are they legalizing weed in Michigan?
Hold on, it's legal in Michigan?
Yes,
why
it's
are they
legal
doing that?
The thing is, it's a debate between the voters and the state of Michigan. Because
so you mean,
voted,
no. Maybe it's an argument between the federal and the state.
And the state.
Because
the federal still have a problem with Washington and Colorado, but they're just not pushing it because it's Obama. He's not pushing that.
Mm-hmm.
He says it's a waste of money to try to fight them in court over some stupid weed. That's the point. And that's why I'm like, why is this guy not an advocate for weed like how he's an advocate for gay life? This is the thing that's so puzzling about Obama. I'm like, you know what it is, too? The people who back weed don't have no money. That's what it is.
Yeah.
If you had somebody who had money backed it and said, hey, weed was set. Weed was
Bill Gates, for instance.
Exactly. It's different.
Mm-hmm.
That's crazy, man. Let me take a break and come back. We're going to come back and talk some more. We're going to talk some more weed later on. But let me just get into this real quickly here.
All right, my brothers.
Yeah, man.
Well. Alone with a lover like no other. Sad to see a new horizon slowly coming into view. Yeah, I wanna be living for the love of you. Highest time, all that I'm giving.
shout out to Mandy Dodd. That's my partner over there in England. Give a quick shout out to her, you know. And she said she supports medical marijuana. One of the issues I wanted to talk about was if what was the topic again? The topic was if someone that you're dating. I was listening to Steve Harvey Morning Show this morning, and somebody had wrote a letter, and basically, would you date a man who was a sex offender? But when you say sex offender, it's a broad brush. Because you could be 18 and your girlfriend is 17 and you get charged for having sex with somebody who's a minor,
right,
or if you're 16,
right,
and she's 15. So we have to be careful and look into it. So what happened is the case happened. She, the woman wrote the letter. She said she met the dude, you know, they talk and everything, and they went on one date. So she did a background check on the dude. When she did a background check on him, she found out that he was a registered sex offender. Apparently, when he was 33, he did something sexually. So if the person is 32 or 33 when they got arrested for this, and they now, they're like almost 40, if they're 32 and they're a sex offender, that to me is a major red flag. Is a major red flag. Because if he's 32, that means she would have to be under 17 years old.
Right. Right.
She would have to be under 17 years old for it to be a sex offender. She had to be 16, 15, somewhere around that age. And it's prevalent in the Caribbean community. In Jamaica, where I'm from, a lot of older men deal with young chicks who are 13, 14, and it's rampant. Even in the Latino community, it's rampant. I hear stories all the time. But my thing is, if you were that woman, and we don't have a woman, is there a woman that could call up right now? I need a woman's point of view on this right now. I really need a female to call in and talk. A lot of people are listening on the internet. I'm asking you if you could call in at 347-826-9457. That's 347-826-9457. And I hate the fact that it's all men, and we really can't speak for women. But if I was giving her advice, I would say, hey, You, because remember, if you're dating a sex offender, your whole life has changed. Because now, wherever he goes, you can't live a certain place because he's a sex offender. You
right.
can't live near a school. You can't
school,
live near
yeah,
a daycare
can't.
Center. You can't live near all these different places. You know what I'm saying? So at the end of the day, you're a sex offender. You know, and I don't know. I don't know how to rectify it, because her question was, what do I tell him on the second date? And Steve Harvey was like, second date? What second date? Why are you even going on the second date? Steve Harvey's sick. But it's reality, though. What do you guys think about that?
That's, I gotta concur with you pretty much to the fact when you said it's a red flag. You know, I can't say anything other than that, it would be a red flag, man. For a man to be 30-something years old and to want to go after someone that young, you know, like, it's kind of like red flaggy for me. I mean, what are you doing going after women that young anyway? You should be more, you know, inclined towards women that are in your same kind of psychological state as far as your mental development is concerned. You know, you look for grown men, look for grown women. That's how I look at it. But I don't know. You know, like, some people look at things differently.
But even if you use Elijah Muhammad's standard, where he said half your age plus 7. So if he was 32, half his age would be 16,
plus 7
would be 23. So 23 years old would be the youngest a person would be under Elijah Muhammad's standard, Nation of Islam
right.
standard. So I'm saying to myself right now, my brother, why are you at 32 trying to get with a young, what are you getting out of that?
Right.
This girl, she don't even know what's popping in the world right now. But you trying to break her out into something that you want. You know, it's unfair to the young girl, too. It's not only
right.
unfair to, you know, she's damaged for the rest of her life. You
right.
know? It's not everybody who has been abused can handle the whole situation. You know
right.
what I'm saying? Some people can't handle it. They hide it for the rest of their life, and you know, I don't know. It's Musa, what do you think about it?
I totally agree with you. It shouldn't be one to date somebody that young. You know, I would want somebody who's educated, who can think. You know, you can't do nothing when you're young. I mean, you know, you can't even go to a club when you're young. You know, so what can you do? You have nothing in common. I mean, it just wouldn't work. But
yeah, maybe you were just doing it for the sake of doing it.
Some young women like them young. Like the older cats, should I say.
Yeah, they do. I can vouch for that.
They like them older because they feel like if they be with somebody their own age, they're not maturity. They're not accountability like the older person is. So, you know, it kind of can go both ways in a sense to the point where, like, okay, you know, this older guy is talking to a young chick. But this same chick likes an older guy because she likes a father figure. She wants a real man.
Right.
If they can understand what a real man is.
Yeah, if they think they know. You're right. I've been in. You ever any one of your brothers ever been to Louisiana?
Louisiana is where? That's in New Orleans, right?
Yeah, well, that's the state, you know, the New Orleans.
That's
in,
Louisiana.
You know, Louisiana.
Okay.
Yeah, right.
No, I've never been there.
That's a real common thing. Like, from my wife would even tell you that she went to a school out there in Southern. You know, she said it was, you know, around the area of Baton Rouge, Louisiana. It was a real common thing. It wasn't like, you know, nobody ever went to, you know, to the laws behind it. You know what I mean? You see guys, you know, that would be like, and even in Georgia where I come from, you know, I can honestly vouch for that too. You know, where I was born at in Georgia, you would see guys that were 30 years old, you know, they would be monitoring, they would like be driving by the high school there, you know, looking for girls to pick up. You know, because the legal age out there in Georgia, legal consenting age out there in Georgia is 16, you know, versus like 17 or 18 in most places, you know. So these dudes would be going over there prowling the high schools looking for these young girls, man. And I was like, you know, I remember even one time a guy who was working with my father, I'm not even gonna say his name because I don't want to put nobody on blast like that. Let's just say he was working with my father, and he was talking about one of my classmates, a girl who I knew. You know, I'm not gonna say her name either because I don't want to put her on blast. But a girl who I knew, it was one of my classmates. She lived like a block down the road from me. I knew her. You know, we're the same age, man. I'm like 16 at this time. This guy's like 27, 28 years old. You know, he's telling me about all the things he's doing to her, you know, sexually and all this stuff like that. You know, I'm like, man, this is sick, man. And saying to myself in my head, like, this is sick. Like, I mean, like, I don't know what y'all think. Like, you know, I don't know. But, you know, even I know old men, you know, that chase after younger women. You know, I've been around them. You know, they just have a thing for women that are young. I think it's the maturity level, though, the level of identification. I think the men that old that look for these women are men that probably haven't matured themselves. You know, they look for women that's on the same level of maturity as them. That's what I think.
I said it's 7 o'clock.
It's 7 o'clock. Go ahead, my brother. Go ahead.
No, I'm done.
I totally agree. I think also not only that, with the young women here in I would say in the hood.
All right, bye.
They want a older what you call them kind of, pimp. They want a pimp. They want a Mac Daddy. They want an older cat with some money.
they want a pimp daddy. They want a pimp daddy.
Yeah. They want them kind of men.
Well, you know what? At the end of the day, men on a whole, we have to be the ones to step up and say, hey, you know what? We don't need to succumb to that temptation and move on. Leave them young girls alone, man.
Yeah.
Leave them young girls alone. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Leave them young girls alone. That's how you get into problems. I'm going to tell y'all a quick story real quick about, it's like a personal confession. When I had my first car, I was very young in America, and I didn't have a license. And I would drive the car, and I would pick up girls. And I picked up this girl, but she looked very mature. And I was like probably 15, 16 at the time. And when I picked her up, it was amazing how I think I picked her up, and then the next day I picked her up. I dropped her home. The next day I picked her up. We ended up doing whatever. And when all of that happened and she went home, I called her at her house phone. And she says to me, I don't think my mom is going to appreciate you calling here. So I'm like, why? And remember, I was just like 15, 16. So she says to me, I said, how old are you? 17? She said, no. I said, how old are you? 15? She said, no. You know what I did? I hung up the phone. I never called that. So you get yourself in a situation that you don't even know, but I was young at the time. I was 15, 16. So, I mean, that's what young kids do. You know what I'm saying? But if I was 32 now, then I'd be like, whoa, I hope I don't run for politics. I don't become a politician. Somebody might come up and say, hey, he abused me when I was young or something. Shoot. But, I mean, it's sad to see a lot of college dudes. Look at the dude in Florida, the quarterback. He could have raped that girl. It's possible he probably raped her.
James
I mean,
Winston,
what was his boys in the room going to say? He did rape her? They going to snitch on him? Nah. But the bottom line is you put yourself in that situation and bad things are going to happen. It happens with a lot of these college kids, especially the popular ones, you know?
Right.
Let me give a shout-out to Ivory right now, just waking up. I just had to call him and wake him up because he had a rough day, man. He ain't sleep all day. He told me at 5 o'clock I'm going to get an hour sleep, and the hour turned into 2 hours. So let me give him a little time to come on, and then we're going to touch on this Paul situation and touch on Paul and Simon Magus and the New Testament. We're going to touch on a little bit of that stuff right now, and
what
we're going to get into it.
Figure two, I wanted to touch on him. We talking about, what's his name, Apollonius. You know, they like to compare him and Paul a lot, too, and him and Jesus a lot, too.
No, I don't like to go there because to me, you had a lot of guys in the first century that did a lot of things, and a lot of, I could get a list for you, and you'd be surprised at how much information we have of these guys, and we don't have no information about the actual person the Bible is writing about.
Right,
and that's sad because I call them, as this author, his name is David Fitzgerald, he calls them the loser messiahs. The loser messiah meaning that they're unknown, but they're unknown messiahs in our life, but they were known back then, but they were written about. Why are these loser messiahs being written about, but the person who's supposed to be written about, there's nothing to be found about him outside the Bible? So that's one of the things that David Messiah touches on in his book. It's called Missing as in M-Y-T-H-I-N-G, Missing in Action. And he has another book called, I think it's called Nailed, 10 Reasons Why Jesus is Not a Real Person or something to that effect. But, I mean, we could touch on that before even, you know what, let me take a quick break. Let me get my stuff together, and I'm going to talk about that. All right.
All right. Ain't this what you came for? Don't you wish you came on? Girl, what you playing for? Come on, let me kiss that. Ooh, I know you miss that. What's wrong? Let me fix that. Twist that. Baby, tonight, I let you know.
Back live, and ladies and gentlemen, we're going to touch on a few. Before we went to the break, we were talking about different folks who are mentioned in the first century in history, and they're written about, and why is Jesus not written about outside the Bible more? You see, it's a tricky situation. I'm going to tell people this. I have studied a lot. New Testament history is my thing. When I was in college, I did a lot of theology courses. And what happened is I didn't want a degree in theology because I didn't think that I could have gotten a job with theology unless I was going to become a pastor. So
right.
I had to take up a field that was pretty similar to that, which was human services. So I ended up getting a management degree and getting a master's in human services. So now I could go out and be a residential manager and be an area, residential manager for the area and all that craziness because of the human services degree. But my heart is always in theology. That's just my heart. So now I took so much course in theology, it's ridiculous. If they said, oh, you need three more credits to do this, I said, can I take the theology course? That's what I would do. I was in love with theology. So when I speak, it's from a person who has studied New Testament history a lot. That's, if you ask me anything about New Testament history, more than likely I heard about it. I might not know all the facts, but I actually heard about it. That's just my feel. Anything you want to know about New Testament history, how it came about from scratch to where it is today, that's me. Talk to me about it, all right, before the Roman influence. The thing that I want to stress to everybody is that the New Testament, as we have it today, wasn't composed until late 2nd century. I'm not saying that the writings did not exist. I am saying that what Irenaeus did at the end of the 2nd century is compose a number of books, I think like 22 books, to be exact. Now, those 22 books happen to be in our Bible today. They happen to be in the Bible today. Now, there were more books that people thought should be in the canon, like the Apocalypse of Peter.
Right.
That was in the Bible until 312 A.D. That talked about whole docetism and all that stuff. That couldn't stay in the Bible. And a lot of people, a lot of people read stuff, but they don't know the history behind it and the truth behind it. And the reason being, and the reason why I want to stress this at the beginning to everybody, when you say Jesus is not written about by anybody, it's really damaging to Christian history, very extremely damaging, because there is tons of information written about in the first century, and we're gonna look at that today. Since you brought this up, my brother, I'm gonna bring this up. We're gonna talk about people who are mentioned and stuff in the first century, and let's look at the information that we have out there, all right? The Romans, slavery, a lot of people don't know that slavery was going on in that time. The Romans used to enslave folks. It's something that we overlook. We overlook this. Why are we overlooking slavery? It happened during that time period. The Romans wanted to basically take over everywhere in the Middle Eastern area of the world, all over Africa. They wanted to take over the whole world. That's what they wanted to do. The easiest way, what Constantine did, he's now regurgitating in his grave because he is moving. He's vibrating. He's moving around in his grave, and he's jumping for joy right now. I said regurgitating. It was the wrong word. But he's moving around in his grave. He's still happy. He's moving. Because his goal was accomplished. He found a way how he could dominate the whole world. And what he could do was dominate it by just giving people a religion. So everywhere you go and you saw that cross, you say, thank you, Constantine, because he's the one that do it. So every Sunday, me and Ivory always post on Facebook, we got to give a shout-out and thank for the Roman Catholic Church, because if it wasn't for them, none of us here would know Jesus, period. I don't care what anybody would say. You would not know Jesus if it wasn't for, you would know about the Islamic version of Jesus through the Quran, but you would not know Jesus the way you do now today. We'd all be saying Allah right now if it wasn't for the Roman Catholic Church and the Romans, because when they had fought all these wars with these Muslims, it was unbelievable. If the Muslims had won, everybody in the West would be saying, Allahu Akbar. God is the greatest.
Yeah, that's true.
Right now. Now, the first century, you got to look at this. The Romans are in power. There's a bunch of people coming up every single minute saying, hey, they're the Messiahs. A lot of people jumping up. I'm the Messiah. Come on, come with me down to the Red Sea. Come to me here. Come to me here. A lot of people. Now, if Jesus of the Bible, you got to think logically here. Let's look at this now. We have a problem when we look at the first century. Look at this quote. The guy's asking a simple question. Christianity had a good long run, but we are long past the point where it's reasonable to be agnostic about the so-called Jesus of faith. It's ridiculous to pretend the lack of historical corroboration of the spectacular gospel events, let alone the New Testament's own fundamental contradictions, aren't a fatal problem for Jesus, the divine Son of God. All right. For example, why does Philo of Alexandria discuss the contemporary state of first century Jewish sects in several of his writings, but not a word on the multitudes who followed the miracle worker and bold, radical new teacher, Jesus, throughout the Galilee and Judea, or of all the long-dead Jewish saints who emerge from their freshly opened graves and wander the streets of Jerusalem, appearing to many. Remember, in Matthew, he's the only one where the earthquake happened, and all those graves open up with the saints, and they ran throughout Jerusalem or Judea or whatever. All right? The next thing is, why does Seneca? I don't know if you guys who are listening are Musa or and Vincent. Victor, are you guys familiar with Seneca the Younger? He's a guy who wrote in the first century. Do you know what he was specialized in? He was specialized in unusual natural phenomena. This gentleman wrote seven books in the first century. It's called Questionus Naturalis. It included eclipses and earthquakes, but not one mention of the Star of Bethlehem, the Pier of Judean earthquakes that were strong enough to split stones, or the hours of supernatural darkness that covered all the land, an event he would have witnessed firsthand. He was alive.
Right.
So Seneca the Younger, by the way, a lot of people don't know this, him and the guy in Nero, the one that they said persecuted Christians, Nero were related. Nero and him was related. And actually, Nero forced him to commit suicide or killed his own family in the year 64 or 65 A.D. All right. So that's Seneca the Younger. He's related to Nero. Nothing about Jesus at all. He wrote seven writings about natural disasters, all kinds of unusual natural phenomena. He wrote about it. Nothing about an eclipse. Nothing about... Why are they leaving out these things? They didn't like Jesus? Was he, you know, what was it? We have to put ourselves back then and think about all these things. All right. Let's look at another thing. Let me see here. Who were Jesus' disciples, and why is it no Gospels agree on who they were? Why do the disciples disappear so quickly in the New Testament after the Gospels, only to pop up again centuries later when churches start spinning rival legends that they were busy founding Christian communities all along?
That's a good question.
If any were martyred for their faith, as Christians frequently insist, why don't we have any details of any of the disciples' death in the Bible?
Not one.
Let's move on.
Good point.
When his skeptical Roman opponent Celsus asked the early church father Origen what miracles Jesus performed, Why can Origen only respond lamely that Jesus' life? Why can Origen only respond lamely that Jesus' life was indeed full of striking? Hold on 1 second. Let me get this word. Full of striking and miraculous events. But from what other source can we furnish an answer than from the gospel narratives? That was the question. Oh boy. All right. I'm gonna leave Paul for now. All right. Let me leave Paul for now. We get to Paul later. Let's look at what some of these scholars. Okay. Let's look at what these couple of these people say about who Jesus was. Will the real Jesus stand up? The link between Jesus' message. No, I'm not even gonna go there. I'm gonna leave that one alone. All right. Let's look at this. The point that you brought up earlier, my friend. You said that other people were brought up, and they could be. They were mentioned, Apollonius or whatever. Let's look at this list, right? He says, I go on to provide of how differently the New Testament and early Christianity would look if even a merely human Jesus had been an actual historical figure. One problem I find with the suggestion that Jesus was a fairly unknown figure in reality has to do with the other messianic figures we know about in this period. There was certainly no shortage of saviors then. We know of a surprising number of wannabe Judean messiahs from around the time of the first century. Here are some of them. He speaks about John the Baptist. John appears in all four Gospels and defers to Jesus, but we actually have more extra biblical evidence for John than Jesus. Josephus mentions John the Baptist briefly, and his sect shows up in a second century apocryphal Acts novel, the Clementine Recognitions, where they are debating against the arrival of the Christians and arguing that John the Baptist, not Jesus, was the Messiah. Did you hear what I just said?
I heard you.
In the Clementine Recognitions, they are debating whether John the Baptist and not Jesus was the Messiah. All right. The first chapter of Luke appears to have been taken from Baptist scriptures originally, with Jesus and Mary added later. All right. We move on. Apollonius of Tyana. Philastrus the Elder wrote a biography of this Neopythagorean philosopher, an allegedly miracle worker. Though many now question whether Philastrus' earlier biographical sources or the subject ever really existed at all. But anyway, they speak about Apollonius. Okay. There's somebody called the Egyptian in Acts. Luke name drops the name, the three failed messiahs lifted from Josephus, because Josephus wrote about them. So a lot of information that Luke has, a lot of people, they're arguing today, and I agree with them, that a lot of the information and stories that are in the Gospels, the additional stories, come from Josephus' writings. All right? That's another story for another time. Incidentally, Luke's mistakes describing these figures are one of the reasons we know he was stealing from Josephus and not vice versa. Listen to this. This one, known only as the Egyptian, led his followers up to the Mount of Olives so they could watch him command the walls of Jerusalem to fall down. For some reason, this plan failed. The Romans slaughtered his flock, and he fled. So that was an Egyptian, and that was what was written about him in history by Josephus. Another guy who I think is very important is Judas of Galilee. He's written of by Philo. He's the one that brought the fourth philosophy, meaning that you had the Pharisees, the Sadducees, and another group, and then he brought in a whole new teaching. All right? Judas of Galilee and Theudas the magician, Luke has the famous Rabbi Gamaliel mentioned the failed uprising both of these two messianic pretenders in a speech shortly after Jesus' death. Unfortunately, listen to this keenly, Theodas, or whatever they pronounce his name, uprising wasn't until over a decade after this under the reign of Phaedus the procurator from 44 to 46. Compounding the error, Luke also blunders by reversing the correct order and saying Judas came after Theudas, when in fact Judas came first, predating Theudas by decades. Now, he basically took their names and then said Theudas did this in such and such a time, and then Galileo told him the story when Galileo was way back in time. So he made that anachronistic error. A lot of people would know because they don't read regular people won't read Josephus' writing, so they won't know this. He took it
right
from Josephus and switched it up and then put it in his book. You know, Luke is one of the most corrupted books, by the way, out there. Then there was these other two people, Athanas the shepherd and Simon of Perea. Judas of Galilee's uprising was one of the several after Herod the Great's death. Athanagus and Simon were two other failed usurpers mentioned by Josephus. Simon, a slave of Herod's, was also mentioned in Tacitus. Next, an imposter, an unnamed Moses-like Messiah, he promised to deliver his followers to freedom if they would follow him into the wilderness, but only succeeded in getting them and himself slaughtered by a troop sent by the Roman governor Festus. Now, this is very important, and I want you guys to listen to this carefully. The Taheb, which is the restorer, he's written about in history, and he was crucified by Pilate in 36 A.D. So there is somebody, a messianic wannabe, who was killed by Pilate in Judea. Sound familiar, right? All right, let's look at it. An unnamed Samaritan, styling himself as the Samaritan Messiah, the Taheb, led his armed followers to their sacred Mount Gerizim, where he would show them sacred vessels buried there by Moses, or at least he would have, if Pilate and his forces hadn't got there first, killing many of them in battle, scattering the rest, and executing the leaders, including the Taheb. Now, you have another guy named Jonathan the Weaver, another Moses-like guy. He was killed. You had Carabas. They have Yeshua ben Aeneas. He was the guy who was saying, woe to Jerusalem. And if you compare his writings along with Jesus in Mark, they are pretty much identical. It's like the same character is in 62 A.D., is the same guy that's in the Bible, in Mark. So obviously somebody took it from somewhere. Something to look into. Now, look at this guy now. The last one I'm going to read about is Simon Bar Giora, yet another messianic figure with interesting similarities to Jesus. Revolutionary Simon was welcomed with leafy branches into Jerusalem as a deliverer, protector from another wannabe messiah, the zealot John of Gischala, whose faction had occupied the sacred precinct. After this triumphant entry, he commenced the cleansing of the temple, sweeping the zealots out of the city. But Simon ultimately surrendered to the Romans, and after suffering abuse at the hands of his guards, was executed as a would-be king of the Jews.
Wow.
What did I say he was executed as? As a would-be king of who? The Jews.
Jews.
All right. All right. Ah, boy. I tell you. Ladies and gentlemen, listen, man, I am not one to play conspiracy theories. I like to look at things from a rational point of view. If the Jesus of the Bible existed, I believe a Jesus existed. You will never hear me say a Jesus never existed. Of course. You'll get that out of me morning, noon, and night. My issue is the person in the Bible seems to be a combination of different figures, a combination of different people who, in my opinion, is like you have, what's the name of that movie, The Avengers, when all of them merge together and they become so powerful, like the Fantastic Four. It's like all these different people who were in the first century. Because if you look at it technically, let's look at this. Paul, let's go to Paul for a second. If you look at Paul's Jesus, it seems like he's more of a spiritual Jesus more than a physical.
Yeah.
Because when you're talking about somebody, I mean, there's proof that Paul said, you know, he was born of a woman and all that stuff. So I know in Galatians 4. Yeah. Yes. But if you look into it, look at what Paul leaves out about Jesus. He says nothing about Joseph and Mary and Bethlehem and Nazareth. He doesn't talk about the birth stories, the Magi, the star, the flight to Egypt. He doesn't talk about Herod and the massacre of the infants. He doesn't talk about John the Baptist or the baptism in the Jordan. He doesn't talk about the trial before Pilate and Herod. He doesn't talk about raising of Lazarus or any miracles of Jesus. He doesn't talk about the cleansing of the temple or the triumphal entry. He doesn't talk about the sermon, the famous Sermon on the Mount, or any teachings by Jesus. He doesn't talk about the passion of Jesus or the transfiguration. He doesn't talk about Peter, the rock, and the keys. He doesn't talk about the denial by Peter or Judas's betrayal. He doesn't talk about the empty tomb. Interesting. Another thing I want to say about Paul, and I'm going to find this real quickly, is that there was a famine in, hold on a second here, Nazarene. All right, good, I found it. All right, let's take a look at who Paul really is. Who was the real Paul? All right, if you notice, all right, what we basically know about Paul is from his letters and from Acts. All right? Let me see here. All right. You know what? I don't want to go into this right now. You know what? I'm gonna leave that alone. All right. I'll say this though. Going back to the whole issue with Jesus and all this stuff. My whole thing is, we don't have any manuscripts. If I'm a Christian right now, how can I prove that the disciples wrote whatever? There's no way for me to say, hey, Jesus said X, Y, or Z. A lot of people don't recognize that because every manuscript that we have, we don't have any manuscript in the second century or first century of Jesus saying X, Y, or Z.
No.
We don't have any. We don't have any at all. We don't even have any complete text, like a whole book in the third century. We don't have that. John goes up to what? 20, chapter 20. It's missing 20, 21. I think Matthew, you have a piece of Matthew, you don't have all of it. Less than a quarter. Same for Mark, same for Luke. You know, these if you don't have an original text, you can't say for sure it's true.
Mm-hmm.
So you know, it's like you're saying you're not living in, it's not blind, it's blind faith. It's actually blind faith, but the thing is it total blind faith? Because if you don't have the originals, and you know Clement of Alexandria had a Gnostic feel to him, Origen had a little Gnostic feel to him, a couple other folks had Gnostic stuff to them, so you don't know who tampered with the Bible. I know that the Hexapla, which is what Origen wrote, he wrote the Hexapla, and that a lot of people say that the Codex Sinaiticus came from that, and the Vaticanus or whatever it's called, and comes from the Hexapla. But my thing is, those books that come from the Hexapla, those books, they don't match up with what we have today, the King James Version.
Mm.
They don't match up. You look at Mark 1, verse 1, the first one, the Son of God. It's not there. You look at this, John 7, 53 to 8, 11. It's not there, the adulterous woman story. It's not there. You have different areas where you find stuff missing, and it's in the Bible today, but back then it's not in the Bible then. Just like the word Christian. The word Christian was not at Antioch. It was Christians, which is a whole other set of people. You know, Christians is not Christians. Christians have a root in the word Christus. But I'll leave that for another time. But ladies and gentlemen, listen, man, the bottom line to everything is, if Jesus in the first century, a real human being, possibly yes, as far as achieving all those things that they say in the Bible, I think it's a far stretch. If he actually did those things, I really and truly believe we would have a true and proper recording of what all these things. If you notice, whenever a Christian argue with somebody or debate somebody about if Jesus existed, and they pull out all these witnesses, I could chop each one of them up like a piece of meat. Each one of them, I could chop them up. But the real issue with these witnesses is that, if you are going to be a witness or you heard a story about Jesus, picture this, Musa. You're living in the first century, and you hear a story about a man, right? And this man happens to be the guy named Jesus. What is the story, the story that you know would resonate if it happened? What's the story you'd hear 50 years later, 60 years later, 100 years later? What is the one story, Victor R. Musa? What's the one story you would hear if Jesus existed and everything happened?
First, I mean, the actual resurrection, if that was a literal event supposedly in the Bible, that would have been documented thoroughly throughout the first century.
Now, look at
this.
There you go. Now, look at this. When Tacitus said Jesus was crucified, right? He never said,
right.
Actually said Jesus was crucified. He said Christ was crucified, which is another thing you have to look into. How many people were called Christ the Messiah,
the first
century? Simon Magus was considered a Christ, and the people that believed it were Christians, according to Justin Martyr in his writings. He said that this guy was worshipped as a god, and he died around 47 A.D. All right. Now, where have you heard that Pilate crucified somebody who was a Christ before? Didn't I just read it about the Taheb? Saying that in 36 A.D. that he was crucified by Pontius Pilate? Now,
right.
If he was crucified by Pilate, that's a story that's out there. Oral tradition. This dude, he thought he was Christ. He was crucified by Pilate. 36 A.D., Jesus was allegedly killed between 33 and 36 A.D. All right. Next thing, Tacitus says he was crucified, right? Now, he never says that he heard that he was resurrected. He didn't hear nothing else. I don't believe that the story, the writing is on point and it's true. But I'm just saying, this gentleman does not say anything about a resurrection. No, he doesn't say, Pliny the Younger, what should we do to the Christians? Nothing about a resurrection. Nothing. The next issue, the issue with, they have all these witnesses that come out and say all these things. And, you know, when they do that, they just force me to bring out my big guns to show how silly and crazy this is. Let's take a look at the folks that we would call them, what would we call them? We'd call them doubters or people that just don't believe. if I was really a believer in this stuff, who would I listen to now? Would I listen to my pastor, or would I listen to somebody who lived around that time? It's a major difference when you're looking at something and somebody else is saying, well, I don't see it the same way you do, but I mean, I still believe, you know. You could have all the blind faith in the world, man. I'm telling everybody right now. I had faith today that when I turned the radio on, it was going to work. And it did. So my faith, it worked for me. Now, let's look at this guy in the second century named Trypho. They say he's possibly the Rabbi Tarfon, because Trypho could be somebody that's made up, but it could be possibly the Rabbi Tarfon in early second century. He says, but Christ, if he has indeed been born and exists anywhere, is unknown. This is the same guy also that says that the whole thing about the whole Christ thing is made up. It's an invention. This is in Justin Martyr's dialogue with Trypho. This is not Garfield Reed saying this. And this is 135 A.D. It was recorded in handwriting around 150. But 135 A.D., they had this meeting. It was a sit-down meeting, Justin Martyr with Trypho and a couple of his friends. All right. Let's move on. Basilides, in the mid-second century, denied Jesus was really crucified and the physical resurrection. Why is he denying this? He said, Christ sent, not by this make of the world, but by the above name Abraxas, and to have come in a phantasm and been destitute of the substance of flesh, that it was not he who suffered among the Jews, but that Simon was crucified in his stead. Whence again there must be no believing on him who was crucified, lest one confess to have believed on Simon. Believed on who?
Simon.
Martyrdoms are not to be endured. The resurrection of the flesh he strenuously impugns, affirming that salvation has not been promised to bodies. Now, listen, this guy's writing around 125 A.D. Now, you tell me. He's telling us a story of Simon Magus, who also wrote in his writings, he wrote that it was him who died instead of the guy in Judea. And that the guy in Judea had come down from heaven, just like how Mark started. If you notice, Mark and John, they don't have a birth story. So
right.
That's something that's implication of a Gnostic root, because that's how the Gnostics wrote, that Jesus came out of heaven. And they actually got this from a writing called The Vision of Isaiah. But that's another story for another time. Now, the thing that I said last night was Basilides, he has a root in Simon Magus. Simon Magus' student was Menander. Menander taught that it was Simon that got crucified and not Jesus. Now, Menander was followed by Saturnius. Saturnius taught that it was Simon died and not Jesus. After him was Cerdo. Cerdo was a teacher of Marcion. They both said that Jesus didn't die. He appeared to have died. It was somebody else. Now, you see somebody's story that is carrying on. I'm not saying that Simon's story is true, but it's a story, and it has a root. So you could tell where it's coming from. So now Simon's story is about Jesus appearing at 30 and so forth, but it was an allegorical story. It was an allegorical story. So when the person who wrote Mark possibly read that story now, they took it to a whole nother level. Now Jesus was baptized, the dove came down, and God said, today I have begotten thee, thy son. They quoted Psalms 22, whatever. It has gone to a whole nother level, because what they tried to do is take an allegorical story and make it literal. This is why Paul doesn't talk about the birth. He doesn't talk about Mary and Joseph and all this stuff. He doesn't talk about these things like it's a real person. He's talking on a spiritual level. But what they did was, and tomorrow we could talk about this some more tomorrow. I'll get my information together. Paul is talking about a spiritual Jesus. And if you look outside the Gospels, I could present 47 quotes in the epistles. I'm talking in all the writings except the Gospels. There's nothing saying that Jesus is going to return in none of the writings except, I think, one verse in Hebrews, if I recall right. 47 quotes, and only one out of the 47 saying Jesus is returned. All of them is saying that he's coming. Why is he coming if he was already here?
Here, yeah. That's a valid point.
Why is he coming, ladies and gentlemen? We need to look into that and understand that Paul's writing. Let's look at Paul more on a spiritual level. A spiritual level instead of a physical, because he's not talking about a physical person. John, I don't think John is on a physical plane either. I think John, whoever wrote John, they claim it was Cerinthus who wrote John and the Revelation, because Cerinthus had a book called Revelations. So Gaius, the Roman presbyter, said that Cerinthus wrote John and Revelations, and there's a group called the Allogi that said they have nothing to do with John's writing, so-called writing, because it was a Gnostic, Cerinthus, that actually wrote it. So that's in the history too. You know, that's hearsay, but hey, it is what it is. All right, let's take a look at, I have so much stuff that's damaging. Look at Dionysius of Corinth in the late 2nd century. He's claiming that Christians were changing and faking his own letters just as they had changed the scriptures of the Lord.
Yeah, I remember that.
What did I just say? He claims Christians were changing and faking his own letters just as they had changed the scriptures of the Lord. Ladies and gentlemen, listen. We need to figure something out here. Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, those names were not given to any books until the late 2nd century. Writings could have existed, but it's obvious that the Roman, what I call the Roman forger mill, did a lot of work in constructing what we have today as the New Testament. So the words that we have, it developed from the late 2nd century to the 16th century, because they made so much changes, it's unbelievable. But we have information of different writings that existed. So these are people who are writing. Look at what Celsus wrote in the 2nd century. He said, clearly, the Christians have used myth in fabricating the story of Jesus' birth. It is clear to me that the writings of the Christians are a lie and that your fables are not well enough constructed to conceal this monstrous fiction. Why is he saying this?
Obviously, there was very, very, very a lot of discrepancy within the writings themselves. I mean, anything would have existed during that time. As you said earlier, they would have been well documented during the first century AD,
exactly.
Right after Jesus. It would have been very well documented thoroughly. There were so many other writings that were thoroughly documented in the first century. I mean, throughout that period of time, going throughout history from that point up until right now, even. You know, I mean, they documented
bro.
People.
Hold on 1 second. Caller, you're live. Caller, you're live. All right, I guess they don't want to talk live on the air. Yeah, but pretty much, if you look at Porphyry, he said in the 3rd century that evangelists were inventors, not historians. So when you hear people saying, oh, you're coming with your conspiracy theory, these are things that people in that time said these things. Look at Julian. Julian was a Roman emperor. I think he was a Roman. He wrote, why do you worship this spurious son a counterfeit, son. You have invented your new kind of sacrifice.
Thank
Julian
you.
Was convinced that the fabrication of the Galileans is a fiction of men composed by wickedness. This is not Garfield saying it. This is Julian saying this in the 4th century in his book called Against the Galileans. He called the Christians the Galileans. Let me see who else could I quote right now. All right, let's take a look more at
What about Arius?
Arius, I don't even want to go into him on the whole. If God is whatever, but you know what's important here? Before we even talk about Arius, there was a gentleman who was a bishop in the second century, and he wrote. The author, Lycus. Hold on there 1 second. Let me see something real quick. Hold on. 646-377-2677. Do you want to be on the air or you just want to listen?
Yeah, I'm trying to listen, and it seems like if I put you on speaker.
All right, hold on. I'm going to put you back on hold then so you could listen, okay?
Thank you.
All right. All right. So basically, if you look in the second century, this is what determines a lot of the things. I have a book called The Book of Popes, The History of the Popes by Joseph McCabe. And in that book, he documents a gentleman by the name of Father Delahaye. He was what you call a hagiographist. What they do is they study the saints, the history of the saints in the Roman Catholicism. Now, the saints, you have a lot of saints there, but the issue with the saints is if what they said about them to us is true or is it false. We heard about Ignatius dying, being thrown to the lions. Well, this hagiographist said that when he checked the records, no one was ever thrown to lions. No one was ever, what do you call that? They say that they are always persecuted. Christians are persecuted, and they are tortured, and they die for what they believe in. He said none of that existed, and if he could point out for like 6 centuries, he could point out 2 people that were martyred, and the way he proved it in the writings of the history of the church that they have, because they don't make all these things public. You have to get somebody from the inside to tell you these things, and what happened was. There would be some folks that were, they said they were martyred. They were martyred. So when you look at their real history now, you would find out the year before they died, before they were martyred. So they're like, if they died the year before, how could they have been martyred the following year? So that's how they started adding up and saying these things were fiction. People would write to say, if Jesus exists and he did all these wonderful things, you don't have to fake your history. Jesus speaks for himself. You don't have to fake any history at all. So the bottom line to a lot of things that were written, like Theophilus of the second century, he's writing at 182 A.D. And he's saying, they asked him about how can you come back to life from the dead? And as an example, you know if he's a Christian, my brothers, if brothers and sisters out there listening, if he's a Christian bishop and somebody says to you, what proof do you have that somebody can resurrect from the dead? Now, Victor and Musa, what would be your answer? If you're a Christian and somebody's asking you at 182 A.D., right, what's your proof that the resurrection happened, that somebody can resurrect from the dead? What would you say if you're a Christian?
If I was a Christian, I would have to go based on blind faith alone. I couldn't answer that question based on, you know, practicality at all, because I would have to say
Let's say if you're a Christian and you believe 100% that Jesus was resurrected from the dead, and somebody comes to you in a debate and says to you, Jesus, What proof do you have?
Oh, shit.
That Jesus resurrected. What proof do you have? What proof do you have? What would we say? I would have jumped up and said, hey, I have the perfect example, Jesus Christ. He resurrected from the dead. That's who I'm talking about.
Right.
He said,
right,
you know what he says? He says to the guy, don't you believe that Hercules, and he called out some other pagan belief. I'm like, why is he mentioning that? If Jesus existed and did all these things, why is he wrote over 29,000 words and didn't mention Jesus or Paul once? Once, and this is a bishop from Antioch, where Paul was. How come you don't know Paul? He wrote a chronology from Adam from Old Testament to 180 A.D. He wrote a chronology of the history of the human race. Never mentions Jesus once. Never mentions Paul. He wrote a chronology of the history of the church. Doesn't mention Jesus. Doesn't mention Paul. Doesn't mention disciples. Listen, man. They asked him about the Trinity. He's the first one ever said triad. And they asked him, what was the triad? The triad was the Father, the Word, which is the Logos, which is the Son, and Wisdom, which is Sophia. Now, everybody jumped and said, well, he mentioned the Logos, the Son. He specifically said in the conversation, Son as not as in begotten as a son, but as far as the Word is concerned. This man is one of the worst witnesses that Christianity has. Whenever I debate a Christian, I always bring up Theophilus of Antioch. Do you know that in the front of Luke and Acts, how it begins? How does it begin? He gives a shout out to who? Theophilus. The only Theophilus that matches what Luke wanted was him, who ruled between 169 and 182. What is Luke being done written in that time period? I say to everybody that's listening, anybody want to challenge me in this? No New Testament gospel, they have no records of any books named Matthew, Mark, Luke or John before 160 A.D. It does 150 A.D. I'm sorry. It doesn't exist. There's nobody running around saying Matthew said, Mark said, Luke said, John said. It does not exist. The first New Testament, according to church history, go online and look for yourself. Marcion wrote it 140 A.D. It was published. And he presented it to Rome as a way for the new religion, the new way for people to believe in. And Marcion did that. If Marcion did not do that, I don't know if we would have a New Testament today. I don't know if we would have what we have today as a religion, because it was a fight between Gnostic believers, between Orthodox Jews, and what we call the literalists. The three types of people. And who won? Rome won. Because they were the powers that be. So in the year 180 to 88, between 182 and 188, Irenaeus did a lot of writings about the history of the church. And he was the one that pulled all those books together. They had their names, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. And that's how we ended up starting to have a New Testament. So anybody want to come on this show, they're invited. If they want to have a debate about the New Testament and how it came about, you could continue living in blind faith. But the truth is, the history is muddy, as they would say in the street. It's muddy, very muddy. There is no transmission from when the disciples, so-called disciples, died up until 200 A.D. We don't know what went on. they tell us this story about Ignatius being killed and all this stuff, and, you know, they wrote, the Romans, all they did was backdate. That's all the Catholic Church did. I just told you, Father Delahaye told the truth about their history. He point blank put it out there that these people backdate stuff and lie about martyrdom. The issue with martyrdom is this. There's a group called the Montanists, started by a guy named Montanus. He thought he was a Christ too in the second century. He had these two girls with him who claimed that they had powers or whatever. And I don't know if people out there know who Montanists are, but it's funny. They believe if you are martyred, you go at the head of the line to go to heaven. That's when martyrdom became popular. So if it became popular late second century, Ignatius and Polycarp and Justin Martyr and all these people who claimed were martyred, what do you think happened? You think it really happened or somebody added that to their story? Luke and Acts was written by the same person, ladies and gentlemen. Luke says Jesus was carried up into heaven. Acts says that Jesus stayed on earth for 40 more days. How do you add that up? Jesus, what he did? He went up and came back down and then chilled for 40 more days and then went back up? Come on, ladies and gentlemen, Acts. Listen, in Acts you have so much contradictions with Paul. Paul said he saw a light. Then he said the dudes with him didn't see the light and they didn't hear Jesus. Then another time they did hear Jesus and they did see the light.
Right.
Another time
right.
They fell on their knees like Paul. Another time they didn't do nothing.
Nothing,
so listen,
yep.
When you have all these different stuff and you say it's the word of God, ladies and gentlemen, that's not the word of God. That's the word of man. So man could write anything. If you want to say it's the word of God and you believe it wholeheartedly, go ahead. That's your choice. I'll give you that. That's when the whole marijuana argument sets in. I got to ask, how much have you been smoking? Because it seems like common sense slips us whenever you start talking about the history of this book. Ladies
right.
and gentlemen, don't take my word. Take Trifo's word. Take Celso's word. Take Porfo's word. Take the words that are written by Christian sources. This is their writing because they destroyed every single writing that you could think of that would speak of anything to do against their religion. But what
right.
happens? I believe that the devil always tells on himself. So you got to look into what they write to find out what the truth is. And listen, I'm telling everybody point blank, there's no way a bishop from Antioch is going to say, hey, if show me proof that somebody resurrected and don't mention Jesus Christ. If you go to a Roman Catholic church right now, I say, Father, I got to confess, man. You know what he's going to say? You confess that Jesus resurrected from the dead, he's going to give the whole speech.
Right,
the whole
died
speech,
for your sins,
20
blah,
minutes.
Blah, yeah.
He died for your sins, blah, 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 and he resurrected. So you're telling me Theophilus, a Christian bishop, straight out of Antioch, didn't know at 180 A.D., from 169 when he was took the title, from 169 A.D., and he never knew if Jesus... Yeah, he ruled from 169 A.D. to 182, I think. And you're telling me he did not know that Jesus was resurrected from the dead? He did not know Jesus at all in the history of the church?
That would have been the first person to come out of his mouth. I mean,
exactly. Exactly. So, ladies and gentlemen, this is the writing that they kept. They probably made a mistake by keeping his writing because it seems that his writing is in its original form, I think. I think it's still in its original form from the second century. So, you know,
I got a question.
We're gonna, go ahead.
My question is, what would that mean for those who believe in it?
For those who believe in the whole story of Jesus, I believe in the allegorical story. I believe it's allegorical.
I'm with you on that.
I don't believe it's actual facts. I think Krishna. I don't believe Krishna is a real person. I don't believe Buddha is a real person. I think
Osiris.
It's all allegory to tell humans
Osiris.
That, hey,
yeah.
you have the ability to reach that level as a human being. You have to strive to be upright. That's all it's saying.
Right.
Not for you to
right.
go around and kill people in the name of religion.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but if people want to take it literal, fine. I mean, we could talk all night about that. But
right.
My point is, these stories, you see, the issue is, I'm not saying it's a conspiracy. I'm just saying this is what the Romans did. This is what they did. You know what I'm saying? This is what they did. It's up to you if you want to take it literally or you want to take it to a whole nother level and take it as
right.
something else. It's up to you.
Right.
I think Jesus, as he's taught, if he as a human being to live upright, treat your brother the way you want to be treated, that's the individual that we need to push out there and say, hey, you know what? He said to live upright, but you start talking about walking on water and all this stuff and all this pagan stuff. And I don't know if you guys know this, but did you know that Jesus' birthday was first celebrated as January 6th?
I've heard of that. I've heard of that before.
And then his father, in the late 2nd century, they argued about it. And then in the 4th century, I think, they changed it to December 25th because
25th,
they wanted to
yeah.
attract pagan worshippers.
Right.
You know, by the way, people who are on the internet, you're now off the air, and whoever is on the phone, we could still talk for a little bit. You know, but we're still here. But, you know, ladies and gentlemen, listen, man, religion is deep. You just got to study. Stop taking somebody else's word for it. Because remember, I was a Christian for like 20 years. So I know what it is to be a Christian. I know what it is. I can't speak about no other religion the way I speak about Christianity. I could chop other religions up all day because that's what I do. But I'm not as thorough about it as I am about the New Testament and the Gospels because I know what it is. I know
right.
what it is. It's when you talk about seven heavens, what is the seven heavens that the man came through? That story came from the vision of Isaiah. I'm going to talk about that tomorrow and show where Paul stole from the vision of Isaiah in Philippians and different parts of the Bible. The vision of Isaiah comes from a book called The Ascension of Isaiah, which is an apocryphal book. But the issue is the Christians also interpolated that book and added their own stuff in it about Joseph and Mary and all that stuff because they wanted to tamper with every single writing. So the vision of Isaiah is a writing from the first century, but the book was composed late second century, third century. Some of it was written 200 B.C. and some of it was written 200 A.D. That's how far it goes across. But if you read the vision of Isaiah between chapter 6 and 11, you see where the root of the gospel story came from. There's no doubt
right.
in my mind. Mark was the first gospel written, and the reason why Matthew and Luke has a birth story and the others don't, because they came after. They came
after.
And they had to show a root, a genealogy of Jesus from David come all the way down. But
right.
how the Old Testament got messed up in this now is that Chronicles, listen to this, ladies and gentlemen. Chronicles has a genealogy from Adam all the way down to a few generations from Jesus. How is that possible if Chronicles was written all the way up near where Moses' time? How could they write a genealogy? That shows that the writer wrote when? Nearer to Jesus' time?
Near Jesus, very close.
Exactly. So, ladies and gentlemen, this is what I do, man. This is what I studied in college. I was a theology freak. And I'm telling you, the Bible is a guide how to live upright, but it's not something for you to take literal and say, hey, you must believe this to go to heaven. If you live by the commandments and live by it, of course, you're going to have a good spirit. You're definitely going to have a good spirit if you live by the commandments. I'll never not that. But for you to say, if you don't believe that, you're going to hell, you're going to get a problem from Garfield Reed. All right? I'll close out there. Musa and Victor, you want to say something before you guys go?
I was kind of closing. I was going to say, comment on the thing, when you was bringing up the stories about Jesus, because I read a book, it's called titled The Sons of God, a while back, you know, where they paralleled these stories, these ancient historical figures, Buddha, Krishna, Osiris, with that of the story of Jesus. It seemed like, you know, someone had maybe intertwined those stories into the story of Jesus or whatnot. But what I get from the story of Jesus, to me, you know, and I was going to elaborate on this yesterday, I didn't get a chance to, because when you asked me, was there a deeper meaning to the biblical words than there was put on, you know, as far as, you know, is there some kind of esoteric meaning there? I believe it's an astrological meaning, you know, and I was going to say that yesterday. I read a book by a man named Bill Darlison recently, like in the past year, titled The Gospel in the Zodiac. He's a Unitarian Christian. Now, it goes on to underline some very, very fascinating things if we think about this, from a historical perspective, right, you know, what was going on at that period of time and how people, men and women, acted with each other, dealing with the sign of, from every sign that you see in the Gospel of Mark, there's some kind of symbolism that deals with every single zodiac sign, every single sun sign, you know, and the very thing with Jesus being had 12 disciples, Jesus being the 13th, if you want to say that like that, you know, he represented the sun in the zodiac, which is the most dominant sign in the zodiac, and the 12 disciples represented the other ones, you know, Aquarius, you know, Pisces, Taurus, whatnot. And that's my personal understanding of it because, you know, when you start looking at it literally from a literal perspective, it doesn't make any sense whatsoever. You can't really look at it from a literal perspective. If you really are a person if you're in tune with anything historical, archaeological evidence, anything like that, you can't look at it from a literal perspective because it doesn't make sense. I think it's a book or a guideline how to teach the higher self deal with the lower self, how to overcome the lower self and to get to the higher self. That's my understanding of the book, you know, but it's a lot of discrepancy. A lot of Christians will, you know, they'll try to rebuttal it with this, that, and the other, or astrology and this, but I can go over some mathematical anomalies, though, in the Bible when we talk about astrology, because I don't think the number 12 pops up in the Bible for no reason. I don't believe that, you know. I'm very, very, very well versed in that. I mean, I grew up, as you said, you were a Christian for 20 years. I was like 16, 17, 18 years a Christian, you know. I grew up as a Southern Baptist, you know, and so the only Bible, the only book I was ever acquainted with was the Bible. So I spent years, you know, just reading the Bible front to back. And then I started seeing some discrepancies in the Bible, and it kind of, like, threw me off. You know, I was like, hold up, wait a minute. This just don't make no sense no more. Like, what is this saying, you know, versus what is that saying? But the first thing they talk about was the 12 tribes of Israel, one, you know, and then from 12 tribes of Israel, that spring forth 12 springs to give water, you know, or, you know, life-giving substance or whatever you want to call it, to the 12 tribes of Israel. You know, 12 and 12. Now, from an astrological perspective, a person who studies astrology like me, I would get into the 12 sun signs, which is dealing with what we call modern-day sun sign astrology, which is Pisces, Aquarius, you know, whatnot. And another 12 is dealing with Eastern astrology, I believe. This is what I believe. I can't prove it, but this is what I believe. Now, dealing with that, you know, we have another number that really pops up in my head when I look at the Bible. It's also the number 144,000 spoken of in the Bible, which is a direct multiple of 12. I mean, it's common sense in here. It's not really difficult. You know, 12,000 times 12 is what? 144,000, of course. So what I believe these people that were spoken of as the 144,000 were people that belonged to different astrological groups. You know, even in Jesus' his decision, you know, when I believe he chose the 12 disciples, I believe that he chose 12 disciples based on astrological points of time. Like, I believe there was one Virgo there. I believe there was one Pisces there. I believe there was one Aquarius there. I believe there was a Taurus there, and, you know, et cetera. On four, I don't believe that, you know, they were just all the same kind of people. I can't believe that because he had the wisdom in that is that you get the thought pattern from every single sun sign. You get the meaning or the feeling or the emotion from every single sign and to understand that perspective and to fully be make a wise, rational decision in a position that he was in, if he was a real figure, that is, you know, as you pointed out earlier, if he was even a real figure, would be to I have all the input coming from these various emotions that happen, you know, during astrological alignment, so I can make an honest judgment or basis based on their judgment, you know, what they think, you know. And even Prophet Muhammad, you know, supposedly, right, he would go in there and he would ask, you know, people for their opinions and what they would do, you know, what would you do, you know. And it was one particular point, I believe, the Battle of the Trench at the The Battle of the Trench. I can't remember the Arabic word for it. I don't want to misquote it. But his judgment was predicated on asking another man, you know, what do you feel in doing right here? So, you know, these people who are supposed to be prophets or whatever, they valued other people's opinions is what I'm saying. And that I believe astrology was the central figure in them understanding this. I believe that this is a very ancient science that goes back, I think, well, someone wrote a book, I forgot who it was, that it went back to, like, the ancient Sumerians are the first ones to actually discover and establish astrology, astrological sequence of things, and which is very profound to me. It's very profound. If it's that ancient, you know, the Chaldeans, I believe it was, who actually established this. I mean, this is very, 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 very productive science for us to learn about ourselves. I mean, everything I've learned about a sun sign, I was talking to a sister online recently, on a blog thing, me and Moose is both on my Facebook page together, right? me and her were talking, and she was like, you know, I've looked into this astrology thing, you know, and this is something I research heavily too. Astrology, I'm deep into astrology, right? But she said, my sign Aquarius doesn't seem to apply to me. I said, have you ever researched your Eastern sign? She said, well, my Eastern sign, what do you mean, Aquarius? I said, no. I said, what year were you born? You know, and then she went on. She said, okay, I'm a pig, you know, by Eastern sign. I said, okay. Well, she said, it's kind of hard because she was a Muslim for me to look at a pig in a positive light. But this is not, when we look at these animals as being symbols, you don't look at it as a literal perspective. You know, you don't look at it as being, I'm equatable to a pig. But it's just as how the Eastern people understood astrology. You know, the animal that they had, that they would equate with these type of characteristics, you know, were pigs, or if they were a rooster, me being a rooster, you know, and I'm a very combative person by nature, and I can't deny that at all. You know, I get to a debate quick, fast, and a hurry. Musa could probably vouch for me on that. You know,
absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, I'm very combative, you know, when it comes to certain things, especially things I feel strongly about.
What's your sign?
Me? I'm a Piscean rooster.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I'm a Pisces, born in the sun sign of Pisces, but in the year of the rooster. I was born in the year of the rooster, you know. So
I'm Gemini.
All right, cool.
Yeah.
All right, so I'll let you guys go, man. We're over time, but, you know,
but, yeah, we'll
pick it up
get
tomorrow.
Back to this. Yeah, we'll get back to this, but that was a good topic. It's more stuff for us to look in on, Paul, too. We appreciate the information, too, brother.
Yeah, no problem,
absolutely.
My brother. Take care.
This is a good conversation. I love this. I'm enjoying this.
All right, family. Take care.
All right. Good night, everybody.